Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
From the 16th chapter in the book of Acts, verses 9 through 15. During the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia pleading with him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." When he had seen the vision, we immediately tried to cross over to Macedonia, being convinced that God had called us to proclaim good news to them. When we set sail from Troas and took a straight course to Samothrace, the following day to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is a leading city of the district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. We remained in this city for some days. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate by the river, where we supposed there was a place of prayer, and we sat down and spoke to the women who had gathered there. A certain woman named Lydia, a worshiper of God, was listening to us. She was from the city of Thyatira and a dealer in purple cloth. The Lord opened her heart to listen eagerly to what was said by Paul. When she and her household were baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come and stay at my home." And she prevailed upon us.
Why do I worry so much? It can't add a day or a year. And it usually comes down to a matter of love or fear. And I really don't know. And I can't tell you why. One sparrow falls to the ground, and then another one flies. Oh, could you throw me a line? Could you take me in? Yeah, the world's spinning faster now than it ever has been. What used to be sure, up and walked out the door, and the old ways I knew just don't work anymore.
Take a look at the tradition of jazz again. And we're going to look at the way musicians, in particular, do something called a jam session. And following jam sessions, there are these other things musicians do. It's called hanging out. I bet you didn't know there were official categories such as that. They hang out with each other. So we're going to look at those times, jam sessions and hanging out, as we continue this series that Matt was talking about, Yes to the Mess. And by the way, if you want to hear any of the previous messages, they're all on our website, and you can find them and catch up if you feel like it. So I want to say just something about jazz musicians and jam sessions. Jazz musicians on many levels live for jam sessions. They love to play together, they love to call out songs for each other, and then they love to hang out afterwards to talk about the session and share experiences and insights. I don't just get this from our book. I do this with these people, and I can say that they like to do the hanging out thing. Part of the reason why, though, is not just because it's fun, but it's because of the special kind of knowledge and transfer that can take place during those times, both jazz jam sessions and the hanging out part. And really, there's no other way to get that kind of knowledge. And there are really great stories, if you read through the history of jazz, about how identity gets formed in the sessions that these folks are together. It's a different sort of approach than a lot of us are comfortable with, jamming and hanging out. It's different than the standard approach to gaining knowledge. And part of the main difference is that you are teaching each other simultaneously while you're playing. You're teaching and influencing each other, and you're letting another person who's next to you with their instrument know what it means to be a jazz musician. And conversation will happen, and you start talking about the sacrifices as well as the joys and the rewards and how to balance the challenge of music with family life or the single life, how to be a good sideman, a person who's always there ready to go with the main soloist, what gigs to accept. That's a very important part of informal learning in jazz, where to play your gigs, how to price your gigs, which ones to just say no to immediately right off the top. All of those kinds of learnings happen during jamming and hanging out. It's time for honest and blunt feedback for each other's playing, too. Not always easy to hear, but it's a learning of a different sort, and it's a deeper kind of music and learning, and jazz musicians for decades have defined this. So lest you fear that you can't do this because you are not a professional jazz musician who went to college and graduate school and studied this and you play professionally, I want to tell you that anyone can do this. Anyone can do this. There's a tradition of this in other kinds of music as well. And we're going to share a personal example for you this morning. Some of you may have already watched this short video because it was on our blog this week. It's very short. It's an example, I want to say, of a jam session, okay? And we're showing this one because we want folks to understand that you don't have to be a professional to participate in a jam session. So what, before you see it, I want you to know, just to set it up because it's very short. The young man you're going to see has only played his harmonica around the house, okay? He's never played it outside of his house, really. He's played it up and down the stairs. He's played it in the playroom. He's played it in his bedroom. Every once in a while, he would attempt to play along with one of his songs on the radio. But watch what happens. So this is a family gathering. They've had a huge meal together. And you can see just in the background, you make out, because it's loud. There's conversation. People are doing the dishes in the kitchen, but what you're going to see is what happens with this young musician who has never played with any other musicians before ever after this gathering. Let's look. Bouncy. Coming for the finish. Big finish. Big finish. That's what can happen when you've never played music before with anybody else, but you surround yourself and your hope with people who know a little bit more than you do. That actually sounded good. I mean, they played together. That's the difference between jazz standard of learning, really, and a basic standard approach to learning. So let's think about that standard approach that all of us, on some level, are usually products of, right? The standard approach to learning is that you are exposed to information and you gather data and you register it and you store it in your memory banks and you call it up whenever you need it, right? See if I can say his name. What? Paulo Freire had this method. He decided that he would call this the banking concept of learning. And most of all of our public schools and a lot of that are based on that, university education. Knowledge is an object that's inside our heads, and it can be transferred from one person to another person, like transferring deposits from one bank account into another. That's why he called it the banking concept. Well, faith communities operate the exact same way. And for decades, we have attempted to transfer knowledge from the Bible, from church history, from our tradition, from books into your brains, right? Or from our brain into your brains. And there's merit to that method if you want to produce folks who can look something up in the Bible, I think, or match a scripture quote with a issue or a dilemma or get in an argument about that sort of thing. But I'm not convinced that in the end, you produce a person who can actually witness to their faith. I'm not convinced that those kinds of sessions produce persons who can identify out in the world when they know that grace has happened, for example. They can say, that was grace. I think that was grace. Was that grace? And then they turn to their neighbor. I think that was grace, and here's why. I'm not convinced with standard forms of learning that you end up with a person whose faith is knitted into the fabric of their very being. To have that kind of faith, you really ultimately have to practice the jazz standard. You have to find the common groove that is going to bring you people with other people together so you can learn from each other and share the stories and the experience of your own understanding. And that'll lead you to breakthroughs and doing things like that young man did. That's why we have kitchen tables here at the table. So that on a regular basis, there is a regular place for us to learn through relationships, to jam and hang out together. Kitchen tables are our current examples of what John and Charles Wesley, who founded Methodism, established as our unique method of doing church differently. Kitchen tables are based really on the jazz standard of learning. It's where social interaction happens. There's a Russian psychologist, Lev Vygotsky, and he named this kind of interaction with people like this your zone of proximal development. My shorthand is within your radius. Within your radius, right? It's in that zone where people who, if you put yourself close enough to them, even if they are better at something than you are, if you put yourself close to them, you yourself can receive a greater capacity to expand your own knowledge, your own faith. And then you, in turn, can turn to someone else and help them. We have a long tradition of learning this way, too, in Methodism. And the passage for this morning that we heard Matt read shows how this one woman, Lydia, a woman who lived pretty much in isolation, hooks up with folks who know a little bit more than she does about practicing their faith. So it was a short passage, pretty much. It's only 7 verses long, but in it, it captures the jazz standard of learning. So let's think about it for just a minute. It begins with a vision, which is a little bit different, in which Paul receives a vision and he's dreamlike from God, and the vision turns him around again. This poor guy, God is never finished with him. Take that as a prompt. God is never finished with us. And this is the same guy who was struck down off his horse and blinded, right? Same man. That's a sculpture of him. And in the vision, Paul sees a Macedonian man who's begging him to come to his land, Macedonia, in modern-day Greece. And at the time, Paul was far away in Troas, which is an Asian port city south of Troy. So Paul decides to answer this vision, and he sets sail for Philippi, and this next step takes him into the European continent. And after telling of this vision, we don't hear about that Macedonian man again. We don't know anything more about him, except he got Paul on the move. And when he lands, he finds a group of women, and they are at the river. down by the riverside. And it's Sabbath, and the writer of Acts lifts up this woman, Lydia, there. One seminary professor noted that we know almost nothing about her. This is pretty much what you get to hear. And here are the few things that are key. She was a seller of purple cloth, so we know she had wealth in some way. But who was she beyond that? Was she making her way in a world that was mostly run by men? Was she a Gentile who was seeking out this new way of Judaism? We don't know, but we know she sold purple cloth. That's all we know. We know a little bit that she worshiped God, but in those two phrases, it shows us that she was open in some way, right? So she rises from the text, and we have her today. So she's on the riverside, which is why we sang that song. It's kind of a secluded place, we think, and perhaps she went there to meet some other folks. Well, go down to Shady, see who shows up, right? Who shows up? You go to communal gathering places, a lot of times extra when you're alone, to see who shows up. Perhaps she went there every Sabbath. We don't really know. But what we do know is that on this day, on this particular day, she's there and she's met by Paul and his companions who happened by. And they were on a mission to look for anyone, right, who was seeking God. And that's what they said about her. She was a woman seeking God in this hidden place of prayer down by the riverside. And lo and behold, she found God, or maybe God found her. So it's an encounter that might not have ever happened at all, if you remember, because most likely since she was a Gentile, Paul, Peter, and those folks were not going to go to the Gentiles. They were them. But last week we looked at even those people who are outside our tradition. We need to hang out with them. So horn players have to hang out with percussionists. And percussionists sometimes have to hang out with string players. Even them. So we remember that this encounter might never have happened if these people weren't already willing to jam with others. And but for the Spirit's nudging, they would not have seen each other. So they see each other. They have a meeting. What might we learn from the meeting? Well, Lydia can teach us a few things in this meeting down by the riverside. She can help us know that what I said earlier, if you just put yourself in the path, and I don't want anyone to quote me saying, my pastor told me to go to Shady Lady and hang out. Although it is a good place to hang out. All I'm saying in that is, where are those like-minded people? Think about that. And consider putting yourself in the path. Because if we put ourselves in the path of inspiration and wisdom and people that we are curious about, something might happen, like what happened to Lydia. Luke describes her as the seller of purple goods, of textiles and dyes. Those were luxuries at the time. And so she might be down there just to network, to sell more purple cloth, right? She might be there, though, to find out who she can help and give some of her purple cloth too. We don't know that either. Wealth and comfort can be hazardous to one's spiritual growth, you know. It can be hard. Jesus warns us about this. Wealth creates sometimes a perception that we're fine. We have enough money. We can take care of ourselves. So she might have come into it thinking, I'm all this and, you know, a bag of chips, as we say. And I don't need any help. But maybe she went down there for a different reason. Maybe she went down there to find a like-minded person. And I think the clue in that is later on that her whole household was baptized. The poet Annie Dillard once said, I cannot cause light. The most I can ever do is put myself in the path of its beam. right? That's the most we can do. And that's, I think, I want to think that that's what Lydia was doing when she came down to the riverside with the woman the day when Paul paid his visit. So just think for yourselves. And maybe jot it down, I don't know, but what path do you need to put yourself in this coming week? Where do you finally need to say, dang it, I'm going to put myself there? It's quite possible this you're in the path. Maybe you came here this morning because you woke up and went, I'm going to put myself in the path of spirituality. The other thing I want us to know is that Lydia seemed open to other people, open to God's Spirit. One theologian, Walter Brueggemann, notes that Lydia listened eagerly to what was new to her, even though she was already, it said, some kind of a worshiper of God. She was looking for new music, maybe. She was not locked into one tune, maybe. She was not locked into her categories of where truth was going to come from. Maybe she was open. She was eager to listen for the new thing that God was going to do for her. And so maybe we too can hear that. Maybe her story urges us to be more open and to look for new tunes and new way. Though this story, you know, is often told, if you read about it in biblical commentaries, it's called Paul's conversion of Lydia. He's like not in the story all that much. It's all about her. So maybe we notice that. Maybe we notice that it's really about the person being opened by God, opening their heart. One person said, the center of this story is this woman's heart. The center of the story is her heart and God's presence in that moment. I jotted it down again, the line that Nicole sang for us. Right where we should be, it's just going to take some time. When we put ourselves in the path, we're right where we should be. The hard part sometimes is it doesn't happen instantly, right? We have to stay at it. But those are the places where longing and openness and great grace meet. And that's what we see here, right there on the banks of the river. Lydia is open. She's ready. She's put herself there. But then something else happens that's really, it's not lifted up greatly, but I really want us to hear it. She makes a decision then. Lydia is decisive because I think she becomes discerning and able to see through the events on the surface of these people gathering and these missionaries coming that this must be God reaching out. And so she needs to be and is ready to respond. We need to be ready to respond. And that's a hard part for a lot of people. We want to put off that decision a lot of times. You know, Matt and I teach our blueprint group throughout the year. He talked about it when we were opening. And at the end of every 6 weeks, we make an invitation to people. We invite people to join a kitchen table. And this year we invite people to make a deep commitment to our community. After 6 weeks, as you can imagine, some folks are decisive and ready, and some folks aren't. And that's okay. Absolutely all right. But what is important to know is to make a decision. I'm ready, I'm not ready, one way or the other. What's important is to place ourselves on a path, and to be open means making a decision, ultimately, one way or the other. One way or the other. And that's sometimes the biggest stumbling blocks for people. They'll say, well, what about Buddhism? Or what about Hinduism? Or what about this? Or what about that? Those are all beautiful things, but you've put yourself in this path. So what about this path? Are you willing to say yes to? And Lydia is an example of a woman who is a Gentile outside of the way, Jewish way of life, who learned about this new way and said yes. So she teaches us that when we encounter the story of Jesus, there's an invitation and an opportunity for us to make a decision. She can teach us one more thing. She can teach us about witnessing, I think. Luke records that when she and her household were baptized, she issued an invitation to Paul and his companions. I have to read it. If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come and stay at my home. And Luke says, she prevailed. I love that word. She prevailed. We all know people say, you're hungry, aren't you? You're hungry. You need some more food, right? Here, have some food. These people prevail upon us. Sit at the table. Have another cup of coffee. She prevailed upon them. Her invitation created space for them to come in, for those women that were part of her community to come in with them. Some of us might call that a jam session. To allow both groups to put down their guard, to experiment, to try something new, to listen and to grow. In a word, her hospitality in opening her home opens the whole community to a new way of being vulnerable. That's what hanging around and hanging out in jam sessions is really about. Finding not only your shared interests, but your common groove that's going to bring you together with other people so they can learn from you and you can learn from them and you can share stories and experiences that lead to the next steps of breakthrough for us. I want to tell you a story out of our book that we've been reading. Every established jazz musician, we checked this out with Anthony, he agreed, has at least one similar story to tell about paying dues at a jam session. So sometimes you put yourself in there and it's hard, right? And this is not a story about any of our people. It's only their business to tell their story if this happened to them. This is a story about a man named Charlie Parker, who's commonly considered a great, great jazz soloist, right? Great jazz soloist. But in 1936, when he was at a jam session that he put himself in the midst of in Kansas City, he was playing with a guy, a drummer, Philly Joe Jones. And he was doing his best, but Philly Joe Jones got so pissed off at him and so impatient that he took his cymbal, and I've been told, Vanessa, that this happens, and he threw it down. So can you imagine how loud Vanessa's cymbal would be if it smashed on the floor? And the whole jam session stopped. And he had to leave because he wasn't good enough. So he said that afterwards he practiced 15 hours a day for 3 or 4 years. He was not going to do that again. 15 hours a day for 3 or 4 years. And what he did over that 3 or 4 years was to learn every standard jazz tune there was in all 12 keys. All right? And so when he returned, he stopped performing in public. When he returned after 3 or 4 years, he was a completely different player. But even he was not all accomplished. He was a different player because he went back to the jam session with people who were still better than him, but because he had mastered and made a decision about what he was going to practice, he was then able to grow even further. And he started recording then things that people had never heard before. So consider Lydia, one of, on record, the first Gentile converts in Europe. What can we learn from someone like her about staying close and staying with it and trying hard and being open and being ready to respond, about offering our homes for jam sessions, about hanging out and being rooted in God's grace deeply enough so that we can recognize it and name it for someone who's not sure about it? Maybe that's why we're all here in this room. So what are we willing to do when we leave this place? Back to Walter Brueggemann. He says that his listeners, that Paul's listeners in those early days, so Lydia's one of them, were invited to base their lives in God's bottomless open, loving mercy. And so this woman, Lydia, was recruited for this new way of being, for this new tune, for this new way. And we only know of her immediate hospitality. I mean, we don't hear of her again in the Bible, but we can imagine that maybe she was just the most party central in that space. We all know those kind of places where there is no stranger known. Offering sessions, morning, noon, and night. Annie Dillard says that only people who are basically at home and at home in themselves can offer such hospitality. So only people who have made certain kind of decisions about how they want to root their lives in grace and grow deeper in faith and reach in love can be open in certain kinds of ways. And so she found that her home and the peace that she could offer matched with the man she met down by the river. And that sense of home, by God's grace, helped her to an openness of heart. So with jazz, you know, we hear it each week. You can master notes, you can master chords, you can master how to blow into a horn or an instrument, you can learn how to coax sound out of strings like David does, you can do phenomenal things out of drum heads and some sticks or brushes, but you also, in that, have to learn how to be and how to do and how to live your life with other musicians and say yes to the mess by surrendering your control and always thinking you have it figured out and hang out with others. There's no guarantee of success. Charlie Parker might have come back and we might have never heard of him again, right? There's no guarantee that we'll have success for our efforts. But it takes courage to say yes to the mess. One of the main ways that we say yes to the mess in these kind of moments is to take what I've said now, and we're going to pause, and Matt's going to help us, and we're going to move into a prayer time, the improvisation of prayer.
I want to invite us. There are so many different ways that we as people of faith can pray. And we try to practice different ways of praying here at the table, both in worship and in kitchen tables. And we want to take a moment this morning to allow you to just sit right where you are and to have the music be, to move in your body and in your heart as prayer. Or some of us might need to move around. We're kinesthetic learners, and to sit for so long can hold us back from saying yes to God. So if you're a person that needs to move, we'd invite you. There are places to kneel and to pray right over here, to just be present. Some of us need to journal and to write. And so whatever you need in this moment to center your heart and your mind in God's love and grace. Some of us are indeed like Lydia, and we're going through our days, and we need to figure out where are the riversides that we need to walk down to, because that's a first step for us, is how are we going to take ourselves out of the paths that we're always in and take some time away? What's that going to look like for us this week? And once we're there, what's it like for us to be open? What's it going to be like for you this week to be open to God surprising you, to coming to you in different places than you expect? Some of us are like Charlie Parker. We've had someone throw cymbals down, smash them down, and tell us to get off stage. So what's it going to be like for us to find our rootedness in God's grace, and in that process, journey back to the beloved child that God always believed we were, even if others haven't believed it in us? What's it going to be like for you to jam this week? Who are you going to invite to play? And where are you going to say yes to that mess and to learn with others? So let us move into this time of prayer, holding these wonderings and whatever is in our own hearts as we pray together. Thank you.
by the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. By the grace of the Lord, I've come a long way. He's been my bread when I was hungry. He's been my company keeper every time I get a little lonely. By the grace of the Lord, I've come along.